Let's kick off another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word by returning to our study of Jesus' Olivet Discourse. The passages you'll want to be looking at today, Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. You remember that this is where Jesus was responding to the apostles' question, when will these things be? Meaning, not one stone left upon another in the temple complex. What will be the sign that these things are about to take place? And all of that has to do with the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70, about 4 decades after Jesus actually spoke the words of the Olivet Discourse. But because Matthew 24 includes a secondary question, which the apostles must have thought related to the exact same question that they're asking, what will be the sign of your coming or your arrival and the end of the age? As I've emphasized repeatedly, the Jewish believers of the first century before the church got started was that when the Messiah came, that was pretty much the wrap-up. Everything that we think of today in relationship to the second coming of Jesus, the resurrection of the righteous dead, transformation of the righteous living, new heaven and new earth coming into existence, judgment, all of that, the Jewish people of Jesus' era thought the Messiah would take care of when he arrived, first thing. We know that Jesus came the first time in order to accomplish the atonement. He will return the second time to wrap everything up. So when the apostles ask that secondary question, it means that Jesus needs to answer 2 questions. And that is exactly what he does. And we've been watching as he answered the first question, when will the temple be destroyed and not one thing, not one stone left upon another in the complex? He said, you shouldn't be confused. You shouldn't be misled. There's going to be false messiahs. There's going to be false teachers, prophets. There's going to be ethnic unrest. There's going to be kingdom unrest. There's going to be famines and earthquakes. Persecution of those that believe in Jesus. And we know from the history book of Acts, as well as the things mentioned by Josephus, a historian of the first century AD, all those things did take place. The trigger event for the apostles and their followers in the church to understand that the temple was about to be destroyed was the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel, and that's Daniel chapter number 9. That prophecy was a countdown to the coming of the Messiah. And in that prophecy, it also included this warning, I suppose, or this truth, that once the Messiah was cut off, that is, executed, that at some point thereafter, there would be a penalty assessed against the Jewish nation and against the city of Jerusalem, that this would be the abomination of desolation. And I've taken you to Luke's paraphrase of Jesus' words about the abomination several times now. And perhaps that's where we ought to actually begin again. This is Luke 21:20. When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation has come near. So the trigger event is Jerusalem having these armies sweep in. And we know that the Roman legion, 12th legion, came into the city in AD 66 because of some Jewish unrest at that time. And this marks the real beginning of the Jewish war, the active part of it. That legion was, for all practical purposes, wiped out. And Josephus tells us that after the Jewish people at Jerusalem saw that happened, many of the prominent citizens of the city swam away from Jerusalem like swimmers abandoning a sinking ship because they knew what would come next. The Roman Empire would have to respond. And so Jesus had told his followers that when they saw this army coming through in 66, verse 21 of Luke, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are inside the city who are out in the country not enter. For these are days of vengeance to fulfill all that is written. So they were warned, when you see this happen, get out of town as fast as you go. Don't try to pack up. Don't try to spend another night. Just go. And the traditional understanding, which I think is reasonable, of church history is not a single Jewish believer in Jesus stuck around after Cestius's 12th Legion was destroyed in 66. They all abandoned ship, and because of that, no believers in Jesus who were ethnically Jewish remained in Jerusalem whenever the Roman armies finally threw down their cordon around the city in the very early spring of 70. And thereafter, 1.1 million Jews died in the city of Jerusalem within the next few months, most of them from Jew-on-Jew violence and famine and disease. And then once the Romans took the city, they desolated it. They dismantled everything up on the Temple Mount so that not one stone was left upon another. All of it was torn down. And so that's what this passage is all about. It's not got anything to do with something in future to us. It's got everything to do with the events of AD 70. Now, Jesus had also said, I'm still in Luke, alas for women who are pregnant, for those who are nursing infants in those days, because it's going to be hard when you have to travel that fast to get out of town. You don't want to have any impediments. Jesus also said in the Matthew and Mark account, you need to be praying to God that all this stuff doesn't happen on a Sabbath day and that it doesn't happen in the wintertime, which thankfully neither one of those was true. Now the Luke passage again, Luke trying to help us understand the meaning behind Jesus' exact words, which we see in Matthew and Mark. In Luke chapter 21 again, verse 23, he says, "For there will be great distress upon the earth." And the word earth there is talking about the Jewish homeland. "And wrath against this people." And that's a reference to the Jewish people living in those Jewish homelands at that time. "They will fall by the edge of the sword and be led captive among all the nations. And Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled." And so from 70 AD right up until the modern time, Jerusalem has not been strictly Jewish. For most of that history, Jewish people were not allowed to be anywhere near the Temple Mount. Only in the close modern history have Jewish people started being in large numbers in the Jerusalem area. But they still do not typically go up on the Temple Mount. It's against the rules. The Temple Mount is allowed by Jewish law to be under the control of a Muslim religious authority. And then all of eastern Jerusalem, on the south side and on the east side of the Temple Mount, that there's a lot of Gentile neighborhoods, Muslim neighborhoods. And so Jerusalem, even to this day, is still being trampled underfoot by Gentiles. Now, I've shared with you my conviction that the times of the Gentiles being fulfilled is the equivalent to what Paul wrote about when he was talking about these things in Romans chapter 9 through 11, particularly toward the end of chapter number 11, where it says this. This is 11:25. Lest you be wise in your own conceits, I want you to understand this mystery, brothers. Now, he's addressing a very large Gentile contingent within the church and effectively telling them that they need to knock off this idea of dissing Jewish people and thinking that God is totally finished with that ethnic group of the Jews. It's actually Paul trying to tamp down some anti-Semitism that was starting to pop into the church at that time. So he says, I want you to understand this top secret information. A partial hardening has come upon Israel, that is, upon the ethnic Jews, until the fullness of the Gentiles has come in. And in this way, all Israel will be saved. So the all Israel there is a reference to the idea of both Jew and Gentile being folded together into true Israel. His whole thesis in this part of Romans, and he's also mentioned it in a couple of other places of his books, is that faith is what saves us, not flesh. And that the true children of Abraham in his faithfulness are those that believe in Jesus as the Christ. The Apostle John comments on this as well in his letters. He says something along the lines of, if one does not have the Son, one does not have the Father either. And so this idea that there is a hardening amongst a lot of ethnic Israelis that will continue until a point in the future. What is that point? I believe that's Revelation chapter 11, the ministry of the two witnesses for a 3.5-year period. And that's the kickoff to the last days, the day of the Lord, which climaxes with the coming of Jesus, but it actually starts with the sun going dark and the moon turning blood red and the stars falling from the sky, Satan and his angels being kicked out of the heavenly dimension, things that are right there in the book of Revelation, breaking of the sixth seal particularly. And so I am convinced that Jesus was predicting that Jerusalem would maintain this status of being trampled underfoot by Gentiles until the final 3.5-year period kicked off. Now, there was some other things that Luke said here. He said that this was going to be a time of great distress. Well, in the Matthew account, it talks about it being a time of great tribulation. Verse 21 of Matthew 24, for then there will be great tribulation such as has not been from the beginning of the world until now, no, and never will be. A lot of people object to that being applied to AD 70 because they don't believe that what happened in AD 70 is the worst thing that's ever happened to the Jewish people at Jerusalem or anywhere. Very often they'll respond by saying a lot more Jews died during World War II and the atrocities of the Holocaust. And that is true if you look strictly at the numbers. 6 million plus Jews murdered because of the madman Hitler and his minions. But we need to understand that the world of World War II is a lot larger population than the time of the first century. In the first century, there are estimates that the world population was somewhere between 300 and 400 million people. That is probably 25 times less than the world population of World War II. And so When we're talking about 1.1 million Jews dying in a few months in AD 70, that is a ton worse when you look at the per capita number of Jews in the world at that time than the 6 to 7 million, maybe even more, Jews that died in the years of Hitler's reign of terror. Not just that. It was also the end of the Old Covenant. The remnants of the Old Covenant sacrificial system were removed from the face of the earth whenever the Temple Mount was destroyed and dismantled. And there is no expectation, in my understanding, of God authorizing the rebuilding and reestablishment of that sacrificial system. Book of Hebrews teaches us that Jesus' death and resurrection was the point of all those sacrificial system ideas. And so once Jesus died and rose again, the sacrificial system was terminated. It was rendered moot, if you will. So I believe that we're still looking in the Matthew 24 passage at comments by Jesus regarding the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. Now, I want to bring in some evidence historically that this is the way it was understood by the Jews of that time as well. First of all, I want to read to you from the Antiquities of the Jews. This is the testimony of Josephus, who was there, watched the destruction of the temple and of Jerusalem. And he was a Pharisee. He was a priest. He was well skilled in the Old Testament. And this is his testimony regarding the fulfillment of prophecy at this time. It says, "Indeed, it so came to pass that our nation suffered these things under Antiochus Epiphanes." Now, he's in this context of Antiquities, Book 10, Chapter 11, Section 7. He was talking about the abomination of desolation prophesied in the book of Daniel that took place in the 2nd century B.C. But keep listening, because he's going to tie it in to what happened in A.D. 70 as well. "Indeed, it so came to pass that our nation suffered these things under Antiochus Epiphanes, according to Daniel's vision. And what he wrote many years before, they came to pass." Now, pay attention here. Listen, here's the next part of his quote. "In the very same manner, Daniel also wrote concerning the Roman government, and that our country should be made desolate by them." Now, that is a reference to Daniel chapter 9. The abomination of desolation in that passage, the one which Jesus was referencing. Then we have this that is tied in with the Great Tribulation idea that we're working on right now. This is also Josephus writing in his Wars of the Jews. It is book number 1, and it's chapter number 4. He says, "Accordingly, it appears to me that the misfortunes of all men from the beginning of the world, if they be compared to these of the Jews, are not so considerable as they were." So he pretty much comes out and says, what just happened to the Jewish people, the loss of their temple, the loss of Jerusalem, the loss of their country, the loss of their sacrificial culture, the desolation that just took place, it was the worst thing that's ever happened in world history. And that's pretty much what the inspired Word of God says here in Matthew 24. Back into Matthew 24, 22. "If those days had not been cut short, no human being would have been saved." Now, it's not talking about annihilation the worldwide. We're focused specifically about the Jewish people right there at Jerusalem in the homelands. So Jesus says, if God had not contracted, focused this event in such a way and given warning ahead of time, then no one would have gotten out of this. But for the sake of the elect, who are the elect? Those that believed in Jesus as the Messiah, those that believed and were saved. Because of them getting this information ahead of time, they left and were not caught up in this horrible destruction. So, but for the sake of the elect, these days will be cut short. So all of this is still about the AD 70 destruction of Jerusalem, when not one stone would be left upon another. Jesus then gives this continued warning about false teaching. Then if anyone says to you, look, here's the Christ, or there he is, do not believe it, for false Christs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. So Jesus warns about false messiahs before the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. But he says, even after the destruction, and from there forward, you need to keep your head on a swivel. Don't get tricked by people trying to tell you that I've arrived. The Messiah has come back. Because it will be obvious when I'm back. He's going to get to that in a moment. Verse 25, see, I've told you beforehand. So if they say to you, look, he's in the wilderness, don't you go out. If they say, look, he's in the inner rooms, don't you believe it. And again, pay attention right here to this next verse. For as the lightning comes from the east and shines as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. So this is the first time that Jesus has addressed their secondary question. What will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And so Jesus' comment is this. After the temple is destroyed, and people are trying to tell you that they can help you meet me in secret somewhere, like out in the wilderness or in some sort of inner room, don't you believe it. Because when I come, everybody's going to know it. When lightning shines from one side of the sky to the other during a magnificent thunderstorm, you can't miss it. I remember being terrified as a kid, trying to pull the blinds down and close the curtains and hide in my bed with my eyes tight shut. And guess what? I still could see the lightning through all of that coverage and definitely could hear all the thunder. So Jesus is effectively saying, nobody's going to miss my arrival as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And so we need to speak to this idea that the second coming of Jesus is not in secret. It is public. Every eye will behold him. And we will come back to that concept of the day of his coming in just a moment. Because this is just an offhand mention, warning about the false teachers. He now goes back one more time to reference the destruction of the temple. Verse 28, wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. Now, that's our English Standard Version. New American Standard has something very similar, King James as well. Hopefully, though, whatever Bible you're studying from should have a footnote on vultures to let you know it's actually the word for eagle. It's a reference to the gold or brown eagle that is common in the Middle East and is seen hovering over battlefields. And so there is this proverbial concept of, if you see the vultures, or in this case, properly, if you see those brown eagles, if you see those golden eagles, you know that's where the dead bodies are. But this is more specifically a metaphor for the coming of the Roman legions against Jerusalem, because every legion at this time was also referred to as an eagle, because they had as their main battle standard, their main worship standard, a brown eagle. It was golden in metal, but it was representative of the brown or golden eagle. And so this is a reference back to, again, this idea that because of the rejection of the Messiah, Jerusalem was dead. The temple was dead. It was like a corpse. And here come the vultures. Here come the eagle standards that are going to clean up the mess. And so everything has now been about, up to this point, the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. Verse 29 is a break point for us. We are now going to focus for a bit on the end of days. That is, the day of the Lord, the 3.5 year period of confrontation and judgment that the book of Revelation is so much about, that will take place immediately before the arrival of Jesus Christ. And this is how we start. And this is only going to lay the groundwork for tomorrow. Matthew 24, 29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, meaning the desolation of Jerusalem and Jerusalem being trodden underfoot by Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are completed. So immediately after that time is completed, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. So Jesus now turns his attention to answering the sub-question, what will be the sign of your coming and the signs of the end of the era? And so for the next session or so, we will focus our attention on the events of the day of the Lord and the events talked about so much in the book of the revelation of Jesus Christ.